When the weather is this warm, there is nothing quite like a haircut. Now, I'm sorry, apologies straight away to most female listeners who won't know exactly what it is that I'm talking about, but the fellas will know that there is nothing like the lifting of that enormous burden that comes with one of those starve the barber type haircuts when the weather is this muggy. So too, it is the same with the sheep. They might not particularly like being shorn, but by God, they love having been sheared. It is going on up and down the country right now, and as soon as those yos have lost the fleece, you will see even the older ones jumping for joy around the field and having a good old scratch. There are 3.5 million sheep in the country. That is a lot of wool every summer. But the price of wool on the international market does not even cover the cost of removing the fleece, as I found out on a trip to the farm of Charles Hughes in Mayo this week.
We're 2 miles from the village of Holly Mountain, County Mayo. We run a suckler herd and a flock of about 200 ewes. I suppose I was pretty much brought up with sheep, and we just continued on, yeah.
What are your feelings about this time of year and shearing?
It's a job that has to be done, and if we could get away without doing it, we wouldn't do it. It's so useless. Its value is so useless. It costs a lot more money to get the wool shorned than we get for it. We have to take what we get. Some people years ago used to store this wool until it would become valuable, and it used to fluctuate. But for the last number of years, the sooner you can get it off the farm, the better. You couldn't provide a shed to hold it like the people, our ancestors, did.
Because space is money.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we start on the belly, take off all the belly wool. Then we work on the undermine, which is in the back leg.
Charles has contracted Dave Herity and his team of shearers to go to work on his 200 yos.
And then we walk up to the neck and we're taking off from the neck. Once we have the neck off, we're going into the first shoulder.
Once the yos are sat up on their bums, a bit of a trance appears to come over most of them. You can't imagine that they particularly like it, but nor do they appear to especially dislike it. And under the assured hands of an experienced shearer, it's all over in under a minute and a half.
And now we're on what we call the money side of the sheep here now.
The money side? What is that?
We're on the nearly finished, on to the next one.
There's absolutely no fear of artificial intelligence coming for your job, is there?
That's for sure, yeah. And I think they've tried different things down through the years. They've tried injection, they tried a few robots, but we see it ourselves, every sheep is different.
Will it all be done today, will it?
Those guys are top class. They'll have those sheep shorn in 4 or 5 hours.
Okay. So a half a day then. Avert your eyes when you're signing the cheque as they're on their way out the gate, yeah?
Oh, yeah, you pay them going out the gate so that you won't have it on your mind and you won't have to be going back paying something that's painful. Disaster, really. There's no money for it. Simple as that.
It's punishing work for you, Dave. It must be frustrating that there isn't more use put to these fleeces.
It's the farmers that we feel sorry for. Because it's such a short season in Ireland that we have to charge so much to justify to being around during the summer and give up other work. Like, if you see, Martin down at the end is a teacher. Michael is a block layer for the winter time and stuff like that. So that's why, I suppose, as Charlie would say, we're so dear.
I suppose, Philip, first and foremost, I am a farmer myself, and I feel the pain that the farmers that we shear for have. Like, you know, they're probably getting 70 to 80 cents a fleece, and sure, we're charging over €3 to shear them. So it's a loss-making exercise. And it's hard for the farmers to put in all this effort and to pay a bit of help and stuff like that to be with us. You can see there's a lot goes on there when there's 3 shearers coming in and stuff like that. You know, you need to be ready.
So what needs to be done to narrow that gap between the value of the fleece and how much it costs to shear it?
But sure, listen, I suppose if they could have more of an industry for the wool, first and foremost, really, I think there's huge opportunities there. Perfect thing, like, how many government buildings are there in Ireland?
No idea.
Hundreds. And sure, there's partitions on a lot of their walls that could have that carpet on them. There's carpets on a lot of the floors and stuff like that. If an incentive was come in by the Irish government to use Irish produce...
And then it'd be a marketing exercise to say all of our buildings are insulated with and carpeted with Irish wool.
Yeah, and maybe it's going to be a loss-making exercise for a couple of years, but anything that seems to be green or renewable is, at the moment, loss-making until there's enough of a scale of it.
It strikes me that the problem here is something of a kind of a failure of imagination, because we think wool, we think of Aran jumpers, we think of products for the tourists or designer jackets or whatever. We're not thinking about the scalable industrial products that this can be used in.
Yeah, yeah. It's textiles are only going to get us so far, and there's very limited. It's all the other uses, and there's a million other uses for it. Like, I've seen a good one is when we get some shearing gear. When it's posted in the boxes, it's wool. It's wool
it's
packaging.
Packed with wool.
Yeah, right. Wool packaging now and stuff like that. So
it has to be 20 times better than bubble wrap.
Exactly, like, and it's biodegradable and everything like that. You know, a shift has to take place.
A mindset shift.
Yeah. So instead, I suppose what I see all the time, especially here in the west of Ireland, is tax, carbon tax this, carbon tax that, and yet we're not doing anything on the ground, you know, that's actually working. If the government took the initiative, if they really want to be green, I suppose they could back this Irish wool and find uses for it. Do you know, I suppose, I don't know how much we're talking, but they're easy enough squanderers on other things.
So that's the challenge laid down then by Dave Herity. Is there demand for wool beyond colourful rugs for tourists? Scalable industrial uses that would take all of the fleeces of 3.5 million sheep every summer, especially if we built a scouring plant on the island to clean all the pesticides and the dags and so on off the wool. Well, to my surprise, once I started hitting the phones this week, I found big businesses, not small cottage industries, big businesses up and down the country crying out for clean wool, and not a knitwear company among them. In Leitrim, JJ O'Hara, CEO of construction company Futurecast, is looking at ways of using wool as a low carbon additive in the concrete mix that goes into 3D printers.
So mountain sheep wool is huge tensile strength. Interesting research done across the globe on that. And this is research that we're going to make it real to 3D printing to develop the whole mix and the certification of it.
Does it make what is not a particularly environmentally friendly process just a little bit greener?
It does, yeah. Like it definitely does. But it's the added value and the lowering the carbon within it as well. But it's using a natural product in our research to show that it can be used in a high volume product. You know, wool is a very valuable thing we feel within the construction industry. The key thing is just getting it clean.
JJ O'Hara. McGee Clothing in Donegal CEO Patrick Temple is straying out of tweed jackets and fabrics and into another application for wool altogether. Acoustic panels, also for the construction sector.
In sound absorption, we do a lovely partnership with Vision Acoustics in Ballymount in Dublin. We've woven fabrics for them, and then they've created further really artistic designs on panels for a multitude of uses, domestic, industrial, open spaces, sound absorption.
There's any number of different things that could be done to support the industry, but what do you think is the key thing?
The beginning is it's really starting at a farm level. The presentation, making sure there is no contamination. One thistle can give us an extra 60 hours work, followed by scouring the environment may have a place.
Would it defray costs considerably not having to export something outside of the country and then bring it back in again?
You're correct in your logic, and more work needs to be done in the feasibility against the volume of wool to be scoured versus the efficiency of a bigger plant and a smaller plant to handle the Irish clipper.
Kevin Dooley is a Tipperary-based wool trader who also makes pillows and bedding stocked by major retailers.
Irish people are spending one third of their life in bed. So if you think about it, a lot of them are sleeping in synthetic bedding or synthetic pillows. So they're sleeping for one third of their life in essentially oil or plastic.
It's Irish, it's biodegradable, it's natural. What could be done to give it a leg up?
We feel if the government was to come in with us and maybe reduce the VAT or put a zero VAT rate on natural Irish wool products, whether it be Irish wool blankets, whether it be Irish wool duvets or carpets, and maybe when that consumer walks into the shop that we're on a level playing field on a price point.
It's not completely mad, is it, when you consider that solar panels are zero VAT rated?
No, we've seen it with what the government have done over the last couple of years where they took the 23% VAT off the PV panels. While we feel like if there's no VAT on wool and on wool products, it's a clean fibre that they're sleeping in, and that you're not that you're trying to eradicate synthetic, but you're giving the person an alternative.
Tim Yeomans is in the business of extracting, wait for it, keratin and ceramides from sheep's wool for eventual use in the cosmetics industry.
So people may be familiar with lanolin, which is the waxy material on the outside of the wool, which is good for the hands and the skin. But there's actually a compound called ceramides, which are on the inside of the wool shaft. So ceramides form actually the part of your natural skin barrier. And so in cosmetics products, they're very good for the skin in terms of supporting that. So we're going to extract ceramides from the wool using special technologies we have in the laboratory. And then we're going to grow skin cells in the lab and test those ceramides on the skin cells to look at their impact on skin barrier. Wool is also comprised 95% of keratin, which is a protein. And we're also going to extract the keratin from the wool and look at its applications in cosmetics, medical device, and also its potential application in bioplastics.
What would be helpful by way of support?
Supports for the wool sector, for example, around green incentives for use of wool in public sector buildings. So wool can be used as a great insulating material. If there was a green incentive for that to be used in public sector buildings, that would help to create a market for the wool. If we had potentially a protected geographical indicator for Aran sweaters, for argument's sake, that if that name was protected and that it had to contain at least, for argument's sake, 30% Irish wool, that would then create a market for the Irish wool that then farmers could start to sell into.
Kate Drury has started a business making rope from wool grown on Rathlin Island off the Antrim coast as an alternative to nylon.
Although people were making rope out of wool, it was being hand cranked and for products like dog leads and things like that. And no one was actually making it at commercial scale. So as a sheep farmer and knowing the low return I get from my wool and a possible new market for wool, I set the company up.
Where is your rope used?
All sorts of places, really, whether it be interiors, designers, on the farm, horticulture, use it in wool coffins, using it, we're doing research in the seaweed industry, land restoration, peat bog restoration, anywhere really that you have cordage or rope or twine.
I would imagine that it is a particularly sustainable alternative for the fishing industry rather than using nylon rope.
We're still doing research with seaweed farmers in Scotland and on Rathlin in Northern Ireland. We put rope out as a growing rope for the seaweed, and we proved that it was a one-time use, but that's not necessarily a negative. That can be a positive. So by having it long enough to be effective, but also then can disappear into the sea and is not an issue, is quite an exciting opportunity for wool.
Kate Drury on Rathlin Island. And those five businesses that I spoke to were just what I came up with after making one afternoon of phone calls. So I know that there must be more out there. And I also know that the hemp supporters are going to be up in arms that we have ignored them this morning. We'll get to you, folks. Do not worry. But you get the point anyway. The bioeconomy, the circular economy are bumping their heads against a glass ceiling, just waiting for the right supports to turn wool from an unwanted byproduct into a valuable raw material. And I got onto the Department of Agriculture and asked them what they were doing by way of feasibility study on a scouring plant. And they said, yeah, we have thrown €500,000 into the idea of looking at a mobile scouring plant. So we will follow up on that later in the year and see where it has gotten to. The Irish Grown Wool Council has helpful advice for farmers on how to better present sheep for shearing. Irish Grown Wool Council, all one word, irishgrownwoolcouncil.com.